When you step inside the Chateau de Brissac, it feels like you're stepping into another time. You take in the foyer. The room is imposing. The walls are decorated with stuffed hunting trophies, and you feel the eyes of bucks and boars staring down at you. Your tour guide leads the group through the rooms of the chateau. In the golden drawing room, the walls are papered with gleaming silk, and the ceiling is an ornate puzzle of shapes, each one accented with more gold. Crystal chandeliers flank the huge stone mantel, intricately carved with a bust of the first Duke of Brissac. The other members of your tour group ooh and ah, taking pictures and staring at the ceiling with the same reverence they would show the Sistine Chapel. You're feeling unimpressed, but you're not here to admire the grandeur. You're only interested in meeting the Green Lady, who has inhabited the chateau for over 500 years. She's one of the most consistent spirits to reveal herself to travelers, and you've flown halfway around the world to document her existence. When the tour group heads downstairs to the wine cellar for a tasting, you carefully slip away, unnoticed. You move slowly to keep your footsteps quiet on the stone floors as you walk toward the chapel tower, where you know to look for La Dame Vere. The thick wooden door to the chapel is closed, but then you hear it. A woman moaning. La Dame Vere. Her pained sounds triggers your adrenaline, making your heart pound. She wails again, louder this time. You steady your nerves and put a hand on the doorknob. You take a deep breath and then turn the handle, ready to meet a ghost. Welcome to Haunted Places on the Parcast Network. I'm Greg Polson. Every Thursday, I take you to the scariest, eeriest, most haunted, real places on Earth. This week, join me on a supernatural journey to the Chateau de Brissac, an 11th century castle where Charlotte de Breze and her lover were murdered by her jealous husband. And discover why, to this day, it's haunted. Listen to more episodes of Haunted Places, as well as Parcast's other podcasts, on your favorite podcast directory. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, at Parcast, on Twitter, at Parcast Network, and at Parcast.com. Many of you have asked how you can support Haunted Places. If you enjoyed the show, the best way to support us is to leave a 5-star review wherever you listen. The Chateau de Brissac was not always the luxury mansion it is known as today. When it was built in the 11th century, the French Counts of Anjou constructed it as a castle fort. It has been rebuilt over time. The only original structures remaining today are the twin castle towers. In one of those towers is the family chapel, home to the mysterious woman known as La Dame Vere. Charlotte de Breze first lived in the chateau in the mid-1400s. The King of France, as a favor to the bride's mother, arranged marriage between Charlotte and Count Jacques de Breze. Despite their 6 children, the union never quite took. When the 2-week respite from her husband was over, Charlotte sat at her dressing table, brushing her hair and deciding what jewelry to put on. Her imbecile of a husband had sent a messenger with a crude and direct note. He had returned. They would take communion together. It was a blunt, troubling end to what had been a magical 2 weeks. Her and Pierre alone in the chateau, free to play as though they were husband and wife. Their affair had started a few months before, Friends since childhood, the Count and Pierre had a brother's bond. But Charlotte and Pierre fell into a natural lust that took them both like wildfire. And when the Count announced an upcoming hunt, Charlotte had persuaded Pierre to stay behind. The Count had been so disappointed that Pierre wasn't joining, he nearly called the whole thing off. But Pierre, clever as always, had painted a picture for the Count of the trophy he would claim. Charlotte was already dreading the next gruesome addition to the Count's prized collection. But a fortnight alone with Pierre was worth another set of antlers on the wall. And now, the Count was back, and the dream was over. Just thinking of it made her throw her brush on the vanity in frustration. He wasn't worth this much effort. With little urgency, Charlotte sauntered through the quiet hallways toward the chapel tower. "Let him wait for me for once," she smirked to herself. Little victories were all she had left. When Mother first told her about the marriage arrangement, Charlotte had fantasized about her future Lancelot, a glorious, well-groomed nobleman in the countryside who respected her and took her on walks through the garden. The Count lived up to none of these expectations. He was a brute. He was rude. And he permanently smelled like horse manure. Mother had sold her off to secure her own place in society. And now, Charlotte was banished to the wild country with this repulsive lout. She knelt to pray in front of the altar in the chapel, counting her rosary, disappointed to see the Count had not yet arrived himself. Her thoughts naturally drifted to her Pierre, who was never late and never smelled of the barn. He was a true gentleman, an unwavering specimen of good upbringing. He could appreciate wine and music. Pierre was what Charlotte truly deserved, a salvation from the Count. Charlotte reminisced, then counted another Hail Mary in atonement. She was pulled from a reverie when she heard the Count's slow approach on the tower stairs. When he finally arrived, Charlotte stood to greet him. The flickering candles on the altar cast shadows on his face and made his eyes look dark and hooded. His movements were slower tonight. His limbs moved loosely. The way he forced his mouth into a smile made Charlotte curious. He looked pained with glee. Probably too much wine, she thought. But when he kissed Charlotte and held her close, she didn't smell any alcohol. He spoke in a clear, soft voice, telling her she looked beautiful tonight. Charlotte mumbled out a surprised thank you, and he released her. But his compliments continued. She was the most beautiful woman in the south of France, and everyone knew it. In fact, he had a gift for Charlotte to celebrate her beauty. She smiled uneasily, but something about this felt off. The Count was not a sentimental man. Gifts were quite unlike him. Charlotte tried to see what he was removing from his coat as he searched with his hand, puzzled. The Count produced a small jewelry box. Inside sat a necklace with a large pendant. Charlotte reached for the present, but the Count caught her hand. His large fingers squeezed around hers, grinding her knuckles into each other, making her wince. "Let me," he commanded. The Count released her and motioned for Charlotte to turn around. He removed the necklace from the box. "Turn around now." Charlotte obeyed, turning away from her husband, sweeping her hair to one side, exposing her neck. The Count moved closer to his wife, towering over her. She felt her heartbeat quicken, confused by his gesture. It all felt wrong. He gently placed the chain, letting the pendant settle on her chest. The Count leaned even closer, whispering in Charlotte's ear. Pierre sends his love. He yanked the ends of the chain, pulling the necklace around her throat like a garrote, cutting into her skin. But the delicate necklace immediately snapped, freeing Charlotte. She screamed, calling for help, but the Count easily overpowered and tackled her. He drove his knee into her spine, pinning her down, but she continued her cries of fear. His huge hands closed around her neck, and her shouts were silenced. His knuckles scraped against her jaw as he squeezed, forcing her mouth closed. She tried to breathe through her nose, but couldn't. Tighter and tighter he squeezed. Charlotte's lungs burned, yearning for air. The Count grunted through clenched teeth as Charlotte fought against him. She searched desperately for breath and clawed at his hands. Her nails dug into his skin, drawing blood. But the Count squeezed tighter. Charlotte saw spots. Tighter. Pierre's blue eyes. Tighter. And then, darkness. For weeks after, the Count heard her screams. It started as nightmares, his mind replaying her death, her desperate final breaths, her shrill, panicked cries. He drank deeply from his wine glass. It didn't make the nightmare stop, but at least this way he could sleep. It was just past midnight, and the Count was on his third bottle. That awful woman. What a waste their marriage had been. Even now, in death, she plagued him, humiliated him. He should find a new wife as soon as possible. But this time, he would leave the king out of it. As his mind started to entertain the possibilities, his eyes grew heavier and heavier until he fell into a dreamless sleep. He woke up to loud cries of agony. His head pounded, and he wasn't sure if this was another nightmare until the moans came again. It was a tormented sound that echoed through every room. The Count stood up, though he wobbled on his feet and lost his balance. He thudded hard onto his back, knocking the wind out of him. He tried to breathe and closed his eyes. He was acting like a fool, drunk, hearing things. The moan came again, louder, closer. The Count scrambled to his feet. First, he saw her hair. It peeked out from behind the door, dangling and swaying back and forth. Her head slowly came into view. It was tilted down, looking at the floor, so the Count was unable to see her face. She moaned again. It was deep and full, and seemed to penetrate every inch of the room. The moan became part of him, pounding in his head. He crossed himself. Oh, Charlotte, what have I done? Her skin had gone gray, decayed, exposing sinew and tendons, and the beginnings of bone. The moan grew louder and louder. It was in everything, the walls, the bed, his ears. The room even shivered with a vibration of sound. The Count fell to his knees. The cacophony was so loud, he could not even hear himself scream. From that moment on, the Count would not have another second's peace. The ghost of his dearly departed showed him more attention now than she ever had in life. He had her complete, undivided attention. The moans were always there now, sometimes loud, sometimes soft. She stalked him through the chateau with her constant wails. When she wasn't screaming, she taunted him, told him all the ways he was going to die in this house. She would make sure of it. Months after Charlotte's death, Imperial soldiers stormed the chateau. They had orders from the King of France to arrest the Count for killing Charlotte. They found him in the Tower Chapel, slumped over in one of the pews, reduced to a shell. His eyes were so bloodshot he could barely see. His face looked sunken. They told him the king's punishment. He would spend the rest of his life in a dungeon. The Count wept with relief. He stood from the pew and surrendered himself to the closest guard. As they shackled him, he laughed, delighted, practically dancing. As they escorted him out of the chateau, he continued to cackle with glee. He didn't care where he was going, as long as Charlotte couldn't follow. Charlotte de Breze was murdered by her husband Jacques on the night of May 31st, 1477, after he found out about her affair. King Charles VII was furious. After all, Charlotte was his beloved but illegitimate stepdaughter. He threw Jacques into prison and passed the chateau onto the couple's son. One would think that with justice served, the saga would be over. But it seems that Charlotte must have had some unfinished business, as her spirit remains in the castle to this day. Coming up, we'll hear more about Charlotte's continued presence in the Chateau de Brissac. Now, back to the story. The residents of the chateau claim that more than a memory still walks the halls of Brissac. Charlotte's ghost is referred to colloquially as La Dame Verte, or the Green Lady, and her dying moans of agony have been heard on every floor. Her spirit has been seen primarily haunting the chapel tower, though she typically only reveals herself to men. In the early 1600s, the Chateau de Brissac was rebuilt by Charles II of Causse. For his support in the French Wars of Religion, Charles had been awarded the property, the title Duke of Brissac, and the funds to renovate by King Henry IV. He converted the dilapidated medieval castle into a seven-story masterpiece that is still today the tallest chateau in all of France. But a renovation won't do much to remove a vengeful spirit. Chloe watched from the stone foyer of the chateau as the household staff unloaded trunk after trunk of her and her husband Charles's possessions. She was trying her best to contain her excitement about moving into the chateau in front of poor Charles. His father's death was an unexpected blow. She'd never been able to get the details directly from her husband, but she knew enough from the gossiping staff. Charles Sr. had gone down to the wine cellar to retrieve a special bottle for his dinner party guests. Only he was allowed in the wine cellar. A key hung around his neck at all times. The gathered guests were giving him a proper send-off before his weeks of travel, and had gone through several bottles already. When Charles Sr. didn't return to the table with reinforcements, the party assumed he had retired to rest up for his trip. They continued to drink without him, late into the night. It wasn't until Charles Sr. missed his scheduled return date, nearly a month later, that anyone thought he might be missing. And it wasn't until a foul smell began to emanate from the wine cellar that anyone realized he had never left. The physician said he must have locked himself in the cellar accidentally. No one heard his cries for help through the thick stone. And even if they had, Charles Sr. held the only key. Now, Chloe's husband, Charles III, was the reigning Duke of Brissac. After the funeral, they had gone home to pack up their Paris apartment and relocate to the chateau, where Chloe would be a duchess. While Chloe felt at home, Charles said the house was full of ghosts. First his mother, who died giving birth to him. Then his father, dead of either drink or stupid pride. The chateau brought back all these painful memories. But Charles was a man of duty. It was his responsibility to assume the title of Duke. And the Duke of Brissac lived in the Chateau de Brissac. End of story. They had only been married a year, and she was still falling deeper in love with him. Every day she noticed a new detail. How he corrected the horse master's saddling without insulting him. How he only drank wine with dinner, if he didn't plan on reading that night. In the chateau, she felt a closeness to Charles that she had never thought possible. In the intimacy of these walls, he truly became the love of her life. But there was a change in Charles now. At night, when they lay in bed together, Charles would fall silent. He'd lie perfectly still, barely breathing, listening for something. If she tried to ask him why, or any questions at all, Charles quickly hushed her, commanding her only to listen. The house was whispering. A voice followed him in the dark. When he closed his eyes, it only got louder. When Chloe held him, it was deafening. As he spoke, his face went pale and his mouth tightened. She'd never seen him so afraid, but she couldn't hear anything. Chloe watched Charles from the opposite end of the dining room table, picking at his food instead of eating it. Silence hung heavy in the room. His clothes were starting to hang on his slight frame, his cheekbones sharp in his profile. After several terse moments, Charles stood from the table and left the dining room, his plate full of food. It continued like this. Charles refused to eat, hardly slept, and seemed to do his duties with an aimless responsibility. Then, one day, he finally fell asleep. She watched his chest slowly rising and falling, and tried to measure her own breaths to match the movement. Charles hadn't slept through the night in months, and Chloe knew if she moved an inch, it would break the spell. Instead, she stayed frozen next to him, listening to him in this rare moment of peace. But it had been so long since she had touched him. Surely a graze wouldn't hurt, if only to feel him for the briefest moment. She carefully turned her head to face him. His breath stayed even, his eyes still closed. Her heart ached for him. Slowly, slowly, she lifted her arm, gently. Gently, she reached over to brush the hair back from his forehead. His face remained peaceful. He almost smiled in his sleep. She dared to move closer. Chloe softly kissed Charles's forehead. But the moment her lips touched his skin, he snapped awake. His eyes stretched open, almost trembling as they looked at Chloe. He cried out and pushed Chloe away from him. No, 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 you can't! You mustn't touch me! She tried to calm him down, cupping his face in her hands, but his body contorted in agony. He scrambled out of the bed and looked wildly around the room. Chloe took a step toward him, but Charles retreated to the far corner and cowered. No! Please, no! He covered his ears with his hands. Chloe tried again to hold him, to soothe him, but Charles was frantic. Get out! He started to tremble. Chloe begged him, just tell her what to do. But Charles was lost in his pain. Get out! It was a desperate, raspy whisper. Get out! Get out!
Get out!
His begging voice followed her as her trembling legs took her out of the room and down the cold, lonely hallway. The next morning, Chloe heard the kitchen staff discussing Charles's latest episode while they prepared breakfast. Everyone in the chateau heard him screaming in the night. Screaming about the whispers, the voice, La Dame there. That name was what the staff whispered to each other when they thought Chloe couldn't hear. Charles had told her the story of La Dame Vert once, but that's all it was. Just a story told to him as a boy by a nanny trying to entertain him and keep him quiet. But now, it was so much more than a story. Every day, he was more and more consumed by La Dame Vert. And her whispers became threats, taunting him, telling him that Chloe would hurt him. Anything she said to tell him otherwise was drowned out by La Dame Vert. One afternoon, she found half the household staff huddled outside the library in the East Wing. Charles had barricaded himself inside after finding several bruises he couldn't explain. He raved on the other side of the door, bellowing accusations. Someone was trying to kill him. Everyone around him wanted to hurt him. La Dame Vert would use all of them against him, if he let them. He hurled a chair against the door with a thunk and a crack. Another chair soon followed. Charles cackled as he built his barricade, sending more pieces of wood into walloping splinters. Chloe sent one of the men to get a physician and ordered the rest of the staff away from the hallway. Charles hissed through the door.
Idiot! I need a priest, not a doctor!
Another chair slammed into the pile. When the physician arrived, Chloe had them cut down the library door with axes. Charles wailed to be left alone as they chopped through the thick oak. It took another hour to move aside the pile of smashed tables and chairs and bookcases. Inside, they saw the destruction. Charles had taken every book from the shelves and ripped out pages from the different volumes. The curtains were yanked down into a crumpled heap on the floor. He was shredding all the silk wallpaper he could reach, yelling that he would find La Dame Vert's hiding place in the walls. Charles kicked and bit and thrashed against them, like a wounded feral animal, begging to be left alone. Chloe tried to go to him, but the doctor held her back. He hurled debris and swung at them with one of the broken chair legs. One of the men retreated from the fray, holding his cheek, trying to stop the bleeding where Charles had left a deep gash. It took 5 men to eventually drag him out of the room. She knew she would have to tell him about the baby soon. But he was so fragile, and she felt paralyzed. Each kick and movement the baby made reminded her that she was running out of time. Once her maids noticed her belly, the news rippled through the rest of the staff. She never found out who it was who broke the news to Charles, but it was clear to everyone the day he found out. For a few hours, the light in Charles returned. He went to his father's wine cellar and brought up as many bottles of champagne as he could carry. He sent for musicians and insisted on a feast. If La Dame Vert was speaking, Charles wasn't listening. He held Chloe tightly, without any pain. All of the fear that had plagued Chloe lifted. It was fresh air after the weeks of suffering, but it was destined to be short-lived. When Chloe woke up the next morning, the sun just pinking up the sky, she could feel another person's presence in the room, and her heartbeat quickened. She rolled over in bed to face the room and yelped. Charles stood motionless at her bedside, staring down at her in the dark. He was deep under the influence of his torment. When he looked at her, it was as though he was looking at nothing at all.
Charles? She questioned.
He remained motionless, his lips pursed tightly. Her heart pounded. In a flash, Charles lashed out at her, trying to grab her. She slipped under his reach and scrambled out of the bed, running down the hallway, holding her large belly, shouting for help. Charles gave chase. She could hear his frantic footsteps behind her. Chloe's feet took her to the chapel tower. When she got there, she finally discovered where Charles had spent his nights. There were scattered papers and food detritus everywhere. The candles were all spent, and the morning light couldn't yet penetrate the tower windows. Shadows on the carved mantle brought out concern in the faces of the apostles in the display. Charles had attacked the holy men with a knife, gouging out their carved eyes. Red candle wax dripped down their bodies. Charles appeared in the doorway. He held a long, glimmering knife. She screamed and ducked into one of the pews, trying to hide her growing belly behind the wood, praying to every maternal saint she could think of for help. Charles stalked her, letting the heavy knife swing loosely in his hand. "You can't have my birthright," he accused Chloe of trying to force him out of the chateau. Once she had his son, she would use the baby to claim his title. She wanted the chateau for her own, just like La Dame Vere told him. She could see the rage boiling under his skin. Chloe tried to talk him down. She would never want to be here without him. His footsteps were slow, but he stared directly into Chloe's eyes as he stalked closer toward her. She started to cry and begged Charles to stop. She would leave if that would help him. He scoffed at that.
"You admit it. You'd steal my baby. My name."
Charles stood over her, holding the knife firmly now, with intention. Chloe closed her eyes, bracing for the pain. She'd named the baby Charles IV out of obligation. He fussed and squalled as Chloe walked him through the halls of the chateau. He could always tell where they were headed whenever she started down the steps to the cellar and immediately resisted, squirming in her arms. When Chloe reached the bottom floor, she took the 40 steps to the door of the wine cellar. The baby wriggled in her grasp. Charles sat there on the floor, motionless. She held up the baby so he could see his father. She wasn't sure how long she would maintain the daily ritual, but for now, it gave her hope. The last light in Charles had been brought out by his son. If one smile or word from him would bring back her love, she had to try. But today was the same as every day before. Charles never moved, slumped against the far wall, his hair wild and covering most of his face. He never stopped mumbling to himself the constant nonsense about La Dame Vere. Chloe waited until the baby grew too restless, then closed the window. She held her son close and comforted him, cooing to him. They would try again tomorrow. The Brissac family has inhabited the chateau almost continuously since inheriting the property in the 1600s. Charles was one of many generations that has reported run-ins with La Dame Vere through the years. She almost exclusively reveals herself to men. Most have seen her in the chapel tower, the site of where she was murdered. She waits there, looking for ways to make lovers suffer as a form of twisted revenge. Coming up, we'll have more on the terrors of La Dame Vere. Now back to the story. Though all agree she still haunts the castle, There are differing accounts on how Charlotte de Breze was murdered at the Chateau de Brissac. Some say the Count lured her to the chapel under pretense, already knowing about the infidelity and wanting to compel a confession from Charlotte. Whether it was the avowal of the affair or her reluctance to corroborate what he thought he knew, one story says the Count strangled Charlotte on the steps of the altar. Other recollections insist that the Count actually caught Charlotte and her lover in the throes of passion. Incensed, he drew his sword and killed them both, stabbing them 100 times, right there in bed. Visitors to the chateau who have encountered Charlotte's ghost describe her wearing a green dress with gashes on her face and body that resemble stab wounds. This could lend credence to the account that this was a crime of passion. However, Charlotte's ghost is known to almost exclusively haunt the chapel tower of the Chateau de Brissac, possibly indicating the chapel as the true site of her death, where every night she dies again. Andrew couldn't sleep. Apparently, the authentic chateau experience went all the way to include the mattress. It was an antique 4-poster frame with a gold-embroidered draped canopy, and was in fact the lumpiest surface his back had ever experienced. Andrew tried adjusting his pillows again, but it was useless. You'd think that a house built for French nobility could afford to spring for a Tempur-Pedic, especially when he was paying $500 a night. Miranda snored heavily next to him, like she did when she took a sleeping pill. She had blamed it on the jet lag. It was still the middle of the afternoon in New York, she said. But he knew it was to avoid him. Even in this place, in the middle of a foreign country, with no one else around, she kept finding ways to dodge his advances for connection, deflecting any opportunity for him to explain himself, let alone any chance for her to forgive him. What an idiot, he thought. This trip was supposed to be his grand gesture to Miranda. She had always wanted to visit the French wine country. He loved the way she said Loire Valley, letting the foreign consonants roll around her mouth. He loved her, and he ruined it. His gut tightened. Total idiot. He needed a drink. It was definitely still drinking time in New York. There were a few extra bottles of wine in the kitchen when they ate dinner. Andrew would just have a glass to help him sleep, settle his nerves. He found his robe and quietly padded across the room, closing the door slowly behind him. His steps echoed in the empty stone hallways. Heavy tapestries lined the walls. In the dim light, the stitched figures appeared to move. Their eyes followed Andrew as he walked down the hall. He stopped walking. In the distance, he could swear he heard a woman crying in pain. Panicked, Andrew ran back toward their room. He flung open the door, ready to save Miranda from whatever made her scream. But she was still snoring away in bed, oblivious. But the crying continued. Andrew followed it to a winding set of stairs. He knew Miranda would chastise him for trying to feed his ego. He always wanted to play the role of the hero, she would say. It was too bad he could never live up to it. But he couldn't ignore the cries of anguish. He had to do whatever he could to help this woman. Andrew stood in front of the door of the chapel. The moaning on the other side was loud, even through the closed door. A sound so anguished that it set his teeth on edge. He slowly pushed open the door, looking inside. The moonlight shone through the stained glass windows, filtering the room in different colors. On the steps of the altar, a woman in a green dress lay face down, weeping and moaning in agony. Andrew slowly approached her and reached out a hand to comfort her. "Are you okay?" The woman whirled slowly to look at him. She tilted her head up, revealing a face covered in bloody gashes. Andrew gasped in horror. The woman's skin was rotten, and her face and body pocked with wounds. There were dark holes in her ruined face where her eyes and nose should have been. Blackness so intense that Andrew couldn't stand to look at her. He quickly jumped back, unable to breathe. When the dead woman's mouth opened, it released another curdling moan. This time, it was all-consuming. It seemed to vibrate around him and within. Andrew bolted from the room. He ran down the steps, taking them two at a time. But the moans of the dead woman followed him, gained on him. Andrew reached the bedroom and quickly retreated inside, locking the door behind him. He rushed to Miranda, still asleep in their bed, and tried to wake her up, shaking her. But Andrew's effort was futile. She wouldn't be awake for hours still. The sleeping pill worked well. Andrew tried to control his panic, but the moaning was on top of them. The dead woman appeared through the door. Andrew dropped to his knees before her. He could see her teeth and bones through the holes in her putrid skin. "Please," Andrew begged. She entered the room, and his stomach dropped through the floor. The dead woman stood over his cowering frame. His entire body trembled as he watched the ghost slowly glide past him and approach Miranda.
"Leave her alone!"
Andrew called out. A clanging laugh filled the room. The ghost reached the bed and leaned over Miranda. Before Andrew could move, the ghost disappeared into his wife's body. Miranda's eyes shot open, glowing green. Her green eyes stared through him. "Miranda?" In jerky movements, her body stood up out of the bed. Step by step, her body moved closer with slow, heavy footsteps. Andrew tried to reason with her.
"Miranda, wake up!"
Her mouth opened, but only the ghost's curdling moan came out. She reached her hands out toward him. The chateau is currently inhabited by the Marquis de Brissac, the eldest son of the reigning Duke of Brissac. He lives in the chateau year-round with his family. They continue to report sightings of La Dame Verte. Though she has haunted the chateau for over 500 years, the castle is better known as a symbol of luxury in the Loire Valley, rather than a home of a ghost. The house and grounds are open for tours in the summer months. Guests are also invited to stay overnight in a handful of the 152 rooms of the chateau, though they should be prepared for the possibility of running into La Dame Verte in the middle of the night. Thanks for listening to Haunted Places. A new episode comes out every Thursday. Listen to all of Parcast's podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, CastBox, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast directory. Many of you have asked how to help the show, and if you enjoy Haunted Places, the best way to help is to leave a 5-star review wherever you listen. We'll see you next week. Haunted Places was created by Max Cutler, is a production of Cutler Media, and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Carly Madden and Maggie Admire. Haunted Places is written by Abigail Cannon. I'm Greg Polson.